Coming up on the Free For All, Dana White of the UFC talking about the sport's future. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you have to watch it? Will you never watch it? Plus, what Dana thinks about what's going on in baseball and basketball and TV rights and all that stuff. Coming up, Free For All.
You're listening to Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
I'm with a man who basically doesn't need an introduction at this point, Dana White of the UFC. Dana, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Welcome to the Free For All.
Thanks for having me.
This new show, looking for a fight.
Right.
You're like Anthony Bourdain all of a sudden. Like you're traveling around the country with your friends Matt and Nick the Tooth.
Right.
You're going to these cities, you're eating free food. Is it free?
No, we pay for it.
Okay, you pay for the food. You're checking out stuff in the city. You go to a Flyers game in Philly after going to Geno's Steaks, and then you're hitting the boards and looking for, you know, talent out there. You know, the minor leagues of the sport. This is something you did a long time ago. Why the hell do you want to get back doing it?
You know what? There's a difference between sitting in the office and watching tape on a guy and actually getting in to a small event, checking them out, feeling the atmosphere. Then you go back and you you meet them, you talk to them. I like it, actually. It's great. And it's such a guy show, because if you went, I don't care if it's fighting or football or whatever it might be, you'd go to a local town, you take in whatever there is to do.
Yeah.
You hear about what a great restaurant you know, they might have at a certain place. You check it out. It's just, it's fun. We've been having a blast with it.
Did you feel you had reached a point maybe where you had felt a little disconnected from those roots, and getting back to it is a good thing for you personally?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You do get disconnected from it, and it is good to get back into you know, the smaller events and feel it out. And you get a better take on a guy when you see it live than you do if you watch it on tape or on TV.
Now, the minor leagues, I'm using this term loosely. I mean, what would you call it? You know, sort of like the smaller productions that are out there.
The small regional shows, you know, they're everywhere. They're all over the
world.
There
are many more than when you were getting started out.
Oh,
many more.
Many, many more. And globally, there's shows all over the world.
Yeah.
So this first season, we're staying in the United States.
Yeah.
And then, you know, next season we're going to travel to different countries and check out talent there.
You did this with YouTube.
Yeah, so the reason I wanted it on YouTube is because we're a global sport now.
Yeah.
And people from all over the world can watch the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about TV and TV and sports. We like to talk about that business angle on this show a lot, and the idea of, you know, TV is an incredibly volatile environment right now, obviously.
It is.
The audiences are changing radically.
Another reason I did YouTube.
You cannot find a person under 20 who sits and watches
TV.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. The other reason we did is cord cutters now. This younger generation, most of these people don't watch TV. They don't, believe it or not, a lot of them don't have TV.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So,
Idea of going to a Best Buy and shopping, that's like for old people. Like, that's like
I'm 46 years old. If I wanted to watch Chips, okay, I had to be home Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and if I missed that episode, I never saw it again. This younger generation consumes television or programming content different than we did. They'll sit down and watch an entire season of Game of Thrones, you know, on Netflix or whatever it might be. It just, that was another reason we went with YouTube.
But we're seeing in the, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, you know, sort of the quote-unquote big four sports, especially football, baseball, basketball, these just extraordinary television contracts, the NFL in particular. And there's some speculation that this is a bubble, that these are networks who are desperate to retain any kind of eyeballs they can. They know they can get it with sports. And on top of it, it's not a DVR kind of thing. You don't watch the football game
right
3 days later. But you know what these deals are like, and you're certainly familiar with those kind of negotiations. Do you think they're overpaying for what they're getting?
I'll tell you what they're starting to realize now is content is king. If you have the content, you can put it anywhere now, and people will come consume it. And if you look at the move that Disney is making right now, with the purchase of Star Wars and some of the other things that they're doing, it's actually very smart.
Yeah,
you know, you look at Star Wars and look at how big this last movie was.
Yeah,
Disney will kill it owning Star Wars.
But these multi-billion-dollar deals that are happening for, you know, college football and so on, we're seeing ESPN is struggling right now because they're losing people left and right.
Yeah,
people are cutting that cord.
Yep.
And they're not going back. And how do you sustain that business?
Yeah, it's tough. Well, you have to adapt quickly,
yeah,
and make moves, and I think you see them doing that. They're going digital now. They're doing things online. You know, like I said, Disney buying Star Wars and other content. They bought a ton of content.
Yeah.
Right now, it's the move. I think you're going to see some of the major leagues, whether it's the ESPNs, the Foxes, whoever it is, starting to snatch up some of this. Try to purchase.
Now, as someone in the content delivery business, can you sell basically anything to a network at this point? They'll take it. You know, oh, okay, we have some practice fights. Yeah, we'll put them on Tuesday night.
Sounds yeah, cool. No, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's very interesting time right now. And if you look at what technology did to the music business,
yeah,
right? I think a few years ago, you could go to the Virgin Megastore,
sure,
or Blockbusters, yeah, or... what was another big music chain? Tower Records.
Yep.
All gone.
Yep.
Now what Uber is doing to taxis, yep, you know, it's pretty...
The disruption.
Disruption. Very interesting.
You are sort of across all platforms, but you also do pay-per-view. That's sort of the bread and butter of the big UFC title fights. And I'm curious to ask you, you think the Super Bowl could be a pay... I mean, it obviously could be a pay-per-view event, but how would it do?
I think it would do very well.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. You know, for as long as I can remember, the NFL was always free.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I pay for the DirecTV package where I can get every game that's on in different markets. I pay for that, and
yeah,
a lot of other people do too.
Yeah.
When you have a show or an event that does, you know, that every year breaks its last record, 100 and yeah, however many million people watching, yes, people would pay for the Super Bowl.
What do you think a fair price would be? You know, because you have all these casual fans and so on. You know, you see people. What do you think, Jim?
Well, what, like the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight was $99. I think that's what they can charge, right?
Oh, wasn't it? It was. I would have paid twice that to watch that fight again. Oh, it was just so great.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, it was worse than that? I bought tickets.
Yeah. Really? Full freight? No freebies for Dana White?
No freebies for me, man.
Oh, man.
Beat me in the head with a stick. I paid for tickets to that thing. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the Super Bowl could charge $100 and people would pay for it.
When you look at leagues like the NFL, the NBA, baseball, you see them as being, I mean, you're a young sport still. This is a sport, you know, I don't want to say it's in its infancy, but, you know, it in terms of its ascension, you know, you are growing your audience. Do you look at them as kind of being dinosaur-like, that they're a little bit slow, that they're sort of old thinking that runs them?
There's no doubt about it. You know, when you look at baseball these days, do you, for the younger generation to go sit somewhere and watch 9 innings of, you know, I don't know. You know, there's always going to be those cities that are really strong, because when you grow up, you're just it's like eating and drinking.
Yeah.
You know, Boston, New York, Chicago, Philly. You know, places like that. But the rest of the country,
yeah,
I don't know. Baseball isn't really that strong.
These sports want what you have, which is that younger demographic, which is young males in particular, but also people who are active. I mean, it's amazing. You go to any mixed martial arts gym in this country now, and people are, you know, it's kids. It's
right.
These are not adults who are, I mean, these kids who, you know, they might not be interested in the combat aspect of it, but they're certainly interested in the endurance aspect of it. And I mean, you are a growth sport. And why do you think you are getting the kids?
Well, there's a few things. You know, when I was growing up, your parents would put you in karate or taekwondo or something like that. This is the new martial art that men, women, and children are taking all over the world. And one of the things that I always believed is, listen, I don't care what color you are. I don't care what country you come from, and I don't care what language you speak. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. Fighting's in our DNA, man. We get it and we like it. It's the one thing. Let me ask you guys a question. Who is the greatest cricket player to ever live?
Sachin Chandahar. I don't know. Who is it, Jim?
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah.
You don't care. That's the real answer
but
to that question.
But that's partly of where we grew up, of course.
Exactly.
I think if we grew up in another part of the world, of course we would care.
Thank
deeply.
You. Yeah. All right, now let's go to India. Or again, let's ask who the greatest football player is. They don't know and they don't care.
Is that why you are fighting around the world? You were in Australia not that long ago. You were in Brazil. You know, is America kind of plateaued for you?
It hasn't plateaued. The great thing about America is America's still growing. We're still growing here. The difference between the United States and the rest of the world is here we have football, baseball, basketball, college football, hockey, soccer. I mean, there's a zillion sports here in the United States. Some of these countries only have a couple sports. So there's a lot of noise here in the U.S. But my point to asking you that question is, you know, I don't care what part of the world you go to, everybody knows Muhammad Ali.
Sure.
Everybody knows Mike Tyson.
Sure.
People know. Everybody knows Bruce Lee. That guy died in the 70s.
Right.
My point to this is, as human beings, we are fascinated by who the toughest person in the world is. Yeah. And fighting works everywhere. Soccer doesn't work everywhere. NFL doesn't work everywhere. Cricket doesn't work everywhere, but fighting does.
Except New York, though, right?
Except New York. Well, it works here. Just we got some dirty politics going on here in New York, and the dirtiest I've ever seen. So
when do you think you're going to see a fight here? I mean, was Madison Square Garden actually on the 3018? you booked it? Okay, good.
Yeah, it's
3018.
Booked. Madison Square Garden 3018.
I mean, the thing that struck me, you know, and I've been, you know, casually following this sport for a couple of years and written about it several times, and you know, everyone of course likes to focus on the brutality aspect of it, and you know, there are moments in which it's brutal, but being around it, especially being around the training, I was just blown away by the endurance skill, the athleticism, the sort of, you know, multimodal problem-solving aspect of mixed martial arts, which I think, you know, to the casual fan, they might not be aware of just the incredible athletes these people are. I mean,
right.
They sort of focus on the sort of, you know, hammering at each other, but, you know, a guy like Conor McGregor or, you know, Holly Holm or Ronda Rousey, these are spectacular athletes.
Right.
There's not just brutality to it.
And you're right. You know, when you talk about, the physical side to this and the mental side, and it's like a chess match. But at the same time, what intrigues people is you realize we have over 100 UFC gyms around the world too, and growing. And you know, there is a whole fitness side and martial arts side to this thing too.
Let me just get quick questions for you, Rousey. When do you think we'll see her again? We can't assume that Holly Holm gets past Misha Tate.
You cannot
that's a
assume
tough fight.
That is a very stylistically, it's a very tough fight. But you'll see Ronda probably in the fall.
And McGregor.
McGregor will be back March 5th. He's fighting the animal beast Dos Anjos for his 155-pound title. Conor McGregor wants to try to be the only man to ever hold two belts at the same time in the UFC.
Is McGregor just a lot to handle, or do you just secretly love the guy?
I love the guy. I respect him for what he has accomplished, and he's different. He's different than anybody else we've ever seen. What seems like smack talk is actually very intelligent, creative planning.
Well, he's creeping into the brains of his opponents. I mean,
yes.
It's sort of the mental game.
Nobody ever in the history, and I even say this over Ali, nobody ever better at the mental warfare game than Conor McGregor is.
Aldo, another shot for him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, how this whole thing plays out with Dos Anjos, and we'll go from there.
You had to have been flabbergasted.
Blown away. Listen, when you come out and say you're going to knock out Jose Aldo in under 4 minutes of the first round, it seems like smack talk until you come out and do it in 13 seconds.
And now McGregor, Ronda was this transformative figure for the sport for sure in terms of mainstreaming, in terms
still
of
is.
Bringing cash, and will continue to be.
Just hosted Saturday Night Live,
right? And in some respects, you know, there's an argument to be made is a more compelling figure now because there's a comeback narrative. It's not just the invincible Ronda Rousey, but McGregor, is he at that stage here? I mean, he's a different character, obviously. It's a global reach for him. I mean,
exactly. I'll tell you what he's really done for us. He's taken Europe to a whole nother level for us. Actually, last week I was in Boston and bumped into these two Irish guys.
Yeah.
And they said, we've been fans of the sport for 10 years and could never talk to anybody about it because nobody knew anything about it. Now it's all anybody's talking about in Europe. He said it's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's really what Conor has helped us do.
Dana White joining us here on the Free For All. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.